Chapter 11. Yourself just now, are you? And a quiet place, with country air and wholesome food and early hours, ought to be the very thing for you. Don't mistake me, she added, for I suppose I looked a trifle downcast. You may find it dull, but you won't be unhappy. My niece is an angel. Her former maid, who died last spring, had been with her 20 years, and worshipped the ground she walked on. She's a kind mistress to all, and where the mistress is kind, as you know, the servants are generally good-humored, so you'll probably get on well enough with the rest of the household. And you're the very woman I want for my niece. Quiet, well-mannered, and educated above your station. You read aloud well, I think. That's a good thing. My niece likes to be read to. She wants a maid that can be something of a companion. Her last was, and I can't say how she misses her. It's a lonely life. Well, have you decided? Why, ma'am, I said, I'm not afraid of solitude. Well, then, go. My niece will take you on my recommendation. I'll telegraph her at once, and you can take the afternoon train. She has no one to wait on her at present, and I don't want you to lose any time. I was ready enough to start, yet something in me hung back, and to guy in time I asked, and the gentleman, ma'am? The gentleman's almost always away, I tell you, said Mrs. Ralston. Quick like, and he when he's there, says she suddenly, you've only to keep out of his way. I took the afternoon train, and got out at D station at about 4 o'clock. A groom in a dog cart was waiting, and we drove off at a smart pace. It was a dull October day, with rain hanging close overhead, and by the time we turned into the Brimpton Plus woods the daylight was almost gone. The drive wound through the woods for a mile or two, and came out on a gravel court shut in with thickets of tall black-looking shrubs. There were no lights in the windows, and the house did look a bit gloomy. I had asked no questions of the groom, for I never was one to get my notion of new masters from their other servants. I prefer to wait and see for myself. But I could tell by the look of everything, that I had got into the right kind of house, and that things were done handsomely. A pleasant-faced cook met me at the back door, and called the housemaid to show me up to my room. Why, you'll see madam later, she said. Mrs. Brimpton has a visitor. I hadn't fancied Mrs. Brimpton was a lady to have many visitors, and somehow the words cheered me. I followed the housemaid upstairs, and saw, through a door on the upper landing, that the main part of the house seemed well furnished, with dark paneling, and a number of old portraits. Another flight of stairs led us up to the servants' wing. It was almost dark now, and the housemaid excused herself for not having brought a light. But there's matches in your room, she said, and if you go careful you'll be all right. Mind the step at the end of the passage. Your room is just beyond. I looked ahead as she spoke, and halfway down the passage, I saw a woman standing. She drew back into a doorway as we passed, and the housemaid didn't appear to notice her. She was a thin woman with a white face, and a darkish stuff gown and apron. I took her for the housekeeper, and thought it odd that she didn't speak, but just gave me a long look as she went by. My room opened into a square hall at the end of the passage. Facing my door was another which stood open. The housemaid exclaimed when she saw it. There, Mrs. Blinders left, that door open again, said she, closing it. Is Mrs. Blinder the housekeeper? There's no housekeeper. Mrs. Blinder's the cook. And is that a room? Laws, no, said the housemaid, cross-like. Tea, that's nobody's room. It's empty, I mean, and the door hadn't, ought to be open. Mrs. Brimpton wants it kept locked. She opened my door, and led me into a neat room, nicely furnished, with a picture or two on the walls. And having lit a candle she took leave, telling me that the servants' hall tea was at 6, and that Mrs. Brimpton would see me afterward. I found them a pleasant-spoken set in the servants' hall, and by what they let fall I gathered that, as Mrs. Rilton had said, Mrs. Brimpton was the kindest of ladies, but I didn't take much notice of their talk, for I was watching to see the pale woman in the dark gown come in. She didn't show herself, however, and I wondered if she ate a part. But if she wasn't the housekeeper, why should she? Suddenly it struck me that she might be a trained nurse, and in that case her meals would of course be served in her room. If Mrs. Brimpton was an invalid, it was likely enough as he had a nurse. The idea annoyed me, I own, for they're not always the easiest to get on with, and if I'd known, I shouldn't have taken the place. But there I was, and there was no use pulling a long face over it. And not being one to ask questions, I waited to see what would turn up. When tea was over, the housemaid said to the footman, "Colin, has Mr. Ranford gone?" And when he said yes, she told me to come up with her to Mrs. Brimpton. Mrs. Brimpton was lying down in her bedroom. Her lounge stood near the fire, and beside it was a shaded lamp. She was a delicate-looking lady, but when she smiled I felt there was nothing I wouldn't do for her. She spoke very pleasantly, in a low voice, asking me my name and age and so on, and if I had everything I wanted, and if I wasn't afraid of feeling lonely in the country. "Not with you I wouldn't be, madam," I said, and the words surprised me when I'd spoken them, for I'm not an impulsive person, but it was just as if I'd thought aloud. She seemed pleased at that, and said she hoped I'd continue in the same mind. Then she gave me a few directions about her toilet, and said Agnes the housemaid would show me next morning where things were kept. "I am tired tonight, and shall dine upstairs," she said. "Agnes will bring me my tray, that you may have time to unpack and settle yourself, and later you may come and undress me." "Very well, ma'am," I said. "Why, you'll ring, I suppose?" I thought she looked odd. "No, Agnes will fetch you," says she quickly, and took up her book again. Well, that was certainly strange. A lady's maid having to be fetched by the housemaid, whenever her lady wanted her. I wondered if there were no bells in the house, but the next day I satisfied myself that there was one in every room, and a special one ringing from my mistress's room to mine. And after that it did strike me as queer that, whenever Mrs. Brimpton wanted anything, she rang for Agnes, who had to walk the whole length of the servants' wing to call me. But that wasn't the only queer thing in the house. The very next day I found out that Mrs. Brimpton had no nurse, and then I asked Agnes about the woman I had seen in the passage the afternoon before. Agnes said as he had seen no one, and I saw that she thought I was dreaming. To be sure, it was dusk when we went down the passage, and as he had excused herself for not bringing a light, but I had seen the woman plain enough to know her again, if we should meet. I decided that she must have been a friend of the cook's, or of one of the other women servants. Perhaps as he had come down from town for a night's visit, and the servants wanted it kept secret. Some ladies are very stiff about having their servants' friends in the house overnight. At any rate, I made up my mind to ask no more questions. In a day or two, another odd thing happened. I was chatting one afternoon with Mrs. Blinder, who was a friendly disposed woman, and had been longer in the house than the other servants, and she asked me if I was quite comfortable, and had everything I needed. I said I had no fault to find with my place, or with my mistress. But I thought it odd that in so large a house there was no sewing room for the lady's maid. "Why," says she, "there is one. The room you're in is the old sewing room." "Oh," said I, "and where did the other lady's maid sleep?" At that she grew confused, and said hurriedly that the servants' rooms had all been changed about last year, and she didn't rightly remember. That struck me as peculiar, but I went on as if I hadn't noticed. "Well, there's a vacant room opposite mine, and I mean to ask Mrs. Brimpton if I mayn't use that as a sewing room." To my astonishment, Mrs. Blinder went white and gave my hand a kind of squeeze. "Dee, don't do that, my dear," said she, trembling like. "To tell you the truth, that was Emma Saxon's room, and my mistress has kept it closed ever since her death." "And who was Emma Saxon?" "Mrs. Brimpton's former maid." the one that was with her so many years? Said I, remembering what Mrs. Realton had told me. Mrs. Blinder nodded. What sort of woman was she? No better walk the earth, said Mrs. Blinder. My mistress loved her like a sister. But I mean, what did she look like? Mrs. Blinder got up and gave me a kind of angry stare. I'm no great hand at describing, she said, and I believe my pastry's rising. And she walked off into the kitchen and shut the door after her. 2. I had been near a week at Brimpton before I saw my master. Word came that he was arriving one afternoon, and a change passed over the whole household. It was plain that nobody loved him below stairs. Mrs. Blinder took uncommon care with the dinner that night, but she snapped at the kitchen maid in a way quite unusual with her, and Mr. Wace, the butler, a serious, slow-spoken man, went about his duties as if he'd been getting ready for a funeral. He was a great Bible reader, Mr. Wace was, and had a beautiful assortment of texts at his command. But that day he used such dreadful language that I was about to leave the table when he assured me it was all out of Isaiah, and I noticed that whenever the master came, Mr. Wace took to the prophets. About 7, Agnes called me to my mistress's room, and there I found Mr. Brimpton. He was standing on the hearth. A big, fair, bull-necked man, with a red face and little bad-tempered blue eyes. The kind of man a young simpleton might have thought handsome, and would have been like to pay dear for thinking it. He swung about when I came in, and looked me over in a trice. I knew what the look meant, from having experienced it once or twice in my former places. Then he turned his back on me, and went on talking to his wife, and I knew what that meant too. I was not the kind of morsel he was after. The typhoid had served me well enough in one way. It kept that kind of gentleman at arm's length. This is my new maid, Hartley, says Mrs. Brimpton in her kind voice, and he nodded and went on with what he was saying. In a minute or two he went off, and left my mistress to dress for dinner, and I noticed as I waited on her that she was white and chill to the touch. Mr. Brimpton took himself off the next morning, and the whole house drew a long breath when he drove away. As for my mistress, she put on her hat and furs, for it was a fine winter morning, and went out for a walk in the gardens, coming back quite fresh and rosy, so that for a minute, before her color faded, I could guess what a pretty young lady she must have been, and not so long ago either. As he had met Mr. Ranford in the grounds, and the two came back together, I remember, smiling and talking as they walked along the terrace under my window. That was the first time I saw Mr. Ranford, though I had often heard his name mentioned in the hall. He was a neighbor, it appeared, living a mile or two beyond Brimpton, at the end of the village. And as he was in the habit of spending his winters in the country, he was almost the only company my mistress had at that season. He was a slight, tall gentleman of about 30, and I thought him rather melancholy looking till I saw his smile, which had a kind of surprise in it, like the first warm day in spring. He was a great reader, I heard, like my mistress. And the two were forever borrowing books of one another, and sometimes Mr. Wace told me he would read aloud to Mrs. Brimpton by the hour, in the big dark library, where she sat in the winter afternoons. The servants all liked him, and perhaps that's more of a compliment than the masters suspect. He had a friendly word for every one of us, and we were all glad to think that Mrs. Brimpton had a pleasant, companionable gentleman like that to keep her company when the master was away. Mr. Ranford seemed on excellent terms with Mr. Brimpton too, though I couldn't but wonder that two gentlemen so unlike each other should be so friendly. But then I knew how the real quality can keep their feelings to themselves. As for Mr. Brimpton, he came and went, never staying more than a day or two, cursing the dullness and the solitude, grumbling at everything, and, as I soon found out, drinking a deal more than was good for him. After Mrs. Brimpton left the table, he would sit half the night over the old Brimpton port and Madeira, and once, as I was leaving my mistress's room rather later than usual, I met him coming up the stairs in such a state that I turned sick to think of what some ladies have to endure and hold their tongues about. The servants said very little about their master, but from what they let drop I could see it had been an unhappy match from the beginning. Mr. Brimpton was coarse, loud and pleasure-loving, my mistress quiet, retiring, and perhaps a trifle cold. Not that she was not always pleasant-spoken to him. I thought her wonderfully forbearing, but to a gentleman as free as Mr. Brimpton I dare say she seemed a little offish. Well, things went on quietly for several weeks. My mistress was kind, my duties were light, and I got on well with the other servants. In short, I had nothing to complain of, yet there was always a weight on me. I can't say why it was so, but I know it was not the loneliness that I felt. I soon got used to that, and being still languid from the fever, I was thankful for the quiet and the good country air. Nevertheless, I was never quite easy in my mind. My mistress, knowing I had been ill, insisted that I should take my walk regular, and often invented errands for me. A yard of ribbon, to be fetched from the village, a letter posted, or a book returned to Mr. Ranford. As soon as I was out of doors my spirits rose, and I looked forward to my walks through the bare moist-smelling woods. But the moment I caught sight of the house again my heart dropped down like a stone in a well. It was not a gloomy house exactly, yet I never entered it, but a feeling of gloom came over me. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.